Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead, and we'll come to that. And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 182.
And I'm Nick. I'm very clearly not Nick. Hello, I'm Emma. I am standing in for Nick for this week.
Nick, you've become sexier.
Yes, I have.
If that was possible. So, yes, you may have noticed that that's not Nick. Last week we mentioned Nick is not well. He got a little better and then he got worse. Right up to the wire of recording this, his voice is completely gone. I jumped in and said, okay, fine, I'll do an episode. And then it was very clear that he can't leave bed. We thought, well, what do we do here? We've got a break coming up for Christmas. Thought, ooh, you know who loves to do podcasts? Emma from Real Life Ghost Stories.
I do love to do podcasts.
World
is
famous.
Is this the point to let people know that I've actually Kathy Bates'd Nick? He's actually handcuffed to my spare bed and his ankles are broken. He's not sick at all. And anytime you've been talking to him, it's actually me.
It's actually you who's been texting back going, yeah, I really can't do this.
I'm
help.
Really unwell.
Emma, so I don't think there's anyone who doesn't know who you are. If you've been listening to the show for a long time, that you'll know that Emma is a good friend of ours and a podcaster. But Emma, tell the lovely people about why the fuck you're here.
Why am I here?
Why are you here?
I don't really know. I'm frightened. There are a lot of kittens. It was unexpected. I'm Emma and I'm also a podcaster. I host a podcast called Real Life Ghost Stories where we tell, you guessed it, real life ghost stories.
Yay.
So if that's your bag, come and listen to Real Life Ghost Stories. If it's not, then you're going to have to listen to me for the next hour.
Thank you. I mean, we really, really appreciate you stepping in. Better to put something out and do a nice story and have you giggle along with us, hopefully. We have no idea how this episode will go, by the way. So
no,
this is
no
just
idea.
Like a bonusy, specially happy episode. My accent's going to come out during this from talking to Emma. I'm going to forget where I am. Emma will stare vacantly at me and then forget to speak. There will be kittens everywhere. So this will be fun.
And I did say just before we started recording, all right, Sinead, we cannot under any circumstances go on crazy tangents that go on for an hour. And then she said, it was like, but we will.
No, we will. Well, as we always ask, any poisonings this week?
Oh, yeah. I personally would love to poison everybody in the estate agent game.
Right. Oh, we're back on that. Great. Because we've had weeks of Nick
like
trying
Nick's
to poison
never
people.
Been away. Yeah. So, yeah, I want everybody to do exactly what I want, exactly when I want it. And that's not happening. So I'm finding that very difficult. Not that I'm controlling or anything, you know.
Not at all. No.
So I'd like to poison just the estate agency field.
Great. If anyone does get poisoned in the estate agents field, Emma had nothing to do with this. This
or
was all
everything to do with
banter.
It. Nobody can see your air quotes, Sinead.
Oh, shit. Right. This is what's going to get us in the trial, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you do air quotes? Yes. Was it on air? Anyone actually saw it, though?
Yeah, nobody saw it. There's no evidence that it happened.
Oh, that's good.
So that's I think, who I'd like to poison this week. What about you? Have you got anybody you'd like to poison this week?
Well, there's no one I'd like to poison. I mean, I do suspect you've already poisoned Nick to take over.
Yes.
That's what's really happening here. What happens, happens. He either fights it or, you know, he had
well,
it coming.
Listen, it's a test of how much of a man he really is. It's like Spartan babies
right.
in 2023.
So we've gone very much in a direction of real men don't get poisoned.
Yeah, real men can be poisoned and survive.
Only girls get poisoned. No, there's no one I'll poison this week, actually. It's been a nice week. Well, I had loads of spare time and then I had to write this episode.
Do you also want to poison Nick this week?
No, he's ill and I wish him only good, happy thoughts.
Nick, if you're listening.
We love you.
We don't.
Just stir the tea.
He did tell me when I was leaving, he said that I wasn't allowed to be better than him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I bet you he will listen this. He doesn't often listen back, but you're listening right now, aren't you, Nick?
Yeah.
Seething with rage. Well, speaking of seething with rage and poisoning your enemies, not really, but I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers. This week, we must thank Kentucky Cried Frickin'.
That's a good one.
Instantly brilliant. Thursday Adams.
Oh, also a good one.
Punch Drunk.
Yeah, like that.
Oh, I like this. And now I'm going to say it wrong. Gin pronounced with a hard G. So gin? Or is it gin?
I don't know. I don't know now.
That's thrown me. I suppose gin would be a soft G.
No, it was a G?
G. No, G. Gin.
No, I don't
gin.
Know. Well, either way, we've gotten it wrong.
It's almost like our career in phononic... fucking what? What?
Our career in what, sorry? I know what that is and I apparently have a career in it.
We're not good at names.
No.
Still, enjoy this episode. Thank you all you delicious, sexy, sexy Patreon subscribers. We've had fun over on Patreon this week. Had a lovely story. We did a big old story about a duck fight that escalated.
Oh, wow. I haven't actually listened yet.
Some lads went out deciding they wanted to worry some ducks.
I mean, we've all been there.
Chase some ducks, really mess up the town. Yeah. But it really escalated.
Is that what happened to the fancy duck in Canterbury?
Oh, Jesus.
Because have you seen that duck lately?
I haven't seen the fancy duck.
That duck is dead.
Oh, no, don't say that.
Because it was worried to death by some louts.
It had too many fancy hats put on its head forcibly.
It was Nick.
How long do ducks live for?
I actually have no idea.
I've never looked that up. Maybe they live for 40 years.
Maybe they do. You know, maybe some creatures, like parrots, live for like loads of years.
Do they?
Yeah, they live.
20 years or something like that.
Or even more. They live for ages. That's how they know all the words.
The way we go. You know, some things live for a long time.
But I think
no, they don't.
But I think parrots live for like a surprisingly long time. So maybe it's the same with ducks.
I mean, parrots and ducks are not that dissimilar.
Yeah, they both have wings.
They both have wings. They would probably sit on your shoulder.
I imagine a duck would. And if I want any duck to sit on my shoulder, I want it to be the fancy duck.
The fancy duck would look very good on your shoulder.
Yeah.
I like it. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, not duck related, please consider joining us on Patreon. You get an extra episode every single week from me and Nick, as well as extra bonus content like videos, like cocktail tutorials, and also book club chat. This month, as we approach Christmas, we are getting into our festive read, which is Hogfather by Terry Pratchett. Everyone in the book club is enjoying that, and we do a Zoom chat with the members of the book club, so you get to sit with me, sometimes Nick as well, and talk about books and drink heavily on video. So it's a nice place to be.
I would like to add that I'm actually a Patreon subscriber.
You are.
I can second all of that and say that Patreon is very, very worth it.
I've never seen you on the book club.
I've never done the book club. I don't actually think I can read.
No, you can't read.
But I can listen to the episodes. And the Patreon episodes are equally as good as the main episodes.
Mm.
They're really good and it's so worth it.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. Visit us at patreon.com/thepoisonerscabinet. Well, Emma, are you ready?
Yes, I think I am.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
Yes. What's the other option?
Well, we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
I mean, either works for me. Whatever you want to do. I'm ready to go if the time is right.
You're just such a good guest, aren't you? Whatever anyone wants to do, it's fine. I'll just sit over here. We're killing ourselves? No problem.
I will say I am slightly concerned because I don't know what this cocktail is going to be. I don't really drink and I'm frightened.
As you should be. Because the cocktail is my domain this week. It is my story, my secret ingredient, so I'm going to get something together for you. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavor our cocktail of the week. And this week's secret ingredient is a diamond necklace. The most diamondy of necklaces.
Famously, a girl's best friend.
But I
do fear that after this cocktail, diamonds will not be my best friend.
Well, we've had diamonds as an ingredient before. I had limited time, so everyone calm down.
Yes.
But a diamond necklace specifically a diamond necklace. And this is a very, very important diamond necklace.
Oh, I'm excited.
Very fancy. I was looking around, couldn't find a lot of jewelry-based cocktails. Lots
that
of cocktails.
Actually surprises me.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Yeah, that we haven't already done, or necklaces or stuff like that. People pointed out a pearl necklace. No, let's not go down that route.
I did see that comment on Instagram and I wanted to comment underneath it and be like, well, I fucking hope not.
This is how it works on the show. You don't know what happens in the shaky, shaky break. You don't know what that noise is.
I don't know what the shaky, shaky break happens. And nobody can see you. You two could be naked recording this for all I know.
Well, normally we are, but I put on clothes for you.
Thank you.
I thought you'd freak out.
I probably would have. I would have been surprised.
Prude.
You nerd.
But yes, with a diamond necklace, a few people had some really good suggestions. But this week, Emma, we are having a French diamond.
Oh, that's exciting. That is actually exciting. I'm going to feel really fancy drinking this.
You are.
And I have the palate of like a teenager. Give me a Bacardi breezer and I'm happy. So this is a challenge for you.
This should have been the week. Again, I was really looking because I thought there must be some like ludicrous cocktail with diamond, with all of the sweet stuff and the shite that you and I used to drink when we were like teenagers and stuff. I actually couldn't find one. But don't worry, Emma, because I have a backup drink. Just in case you don't like this one. But I can't wait to see your reaction to it.
I'm actually a little bit excited. So yeah, let's do it.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. Well, I think it is high time for us to both skip into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
See you in a bit.
Seamless. And we're back.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm trying my best to channel Nick. It's not going very well.
No, just be you. You just be you.
Oh, no, I want to be Nick.
Okay, try.
That's what I've always wanted.
All right.
Hello, chartreuse curtains, show tunes.
It's like he's here. Wonderful. Well, Emma, we have our drink. How would you describe it?
So, looking at it right, it's a sort of a brownie orangey drink. And I know from listening to the podcast that brownie orangey drinks are generally a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've had a lot of success with brown drinks.
Yes. How does it smell?
It smells very strong.
There are two drinks in front of Emma. This is the main one. So we're both going to try it. You look very frightened.
I am frightened because it smells, I don't know if I'm wrong, but it smells whiskey-ish to me. But I could be wrong.
All right. Well, dive in. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right.
Right.
Okay.
It's not bad. Right? But is there whiskey in it?
No.
Bourbon?
Nope.
Something whiskey-ish?
Not really.
Oh, Christ. Then I don't know what it is.
I mean, you're not a million miles away, but it's not a whiskey.
Brandy?
Is a cognac.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not, honestly, it's not bad. You can really taste the cognac, which is rich coming from me, considering I didn't know what it was and I named a million other things. However, it's not strong enough that it makes me want to claw my own face off. I'm going to go in for a second sip.
I like that.
I think it's nice. I think if I had a full glass of it, I would be pulling my own face off. Be rolling around on the floor. But it's not offensive. Like, I know Nick loves a Negroni and you love a Negroni and you guys are always like, it's the second sip, you know?
Yeah.
Every time I've tried a Negroni, I feel like my face is turning inside out. But I don't get that with this.
Yeah, Negroni, like the extra bitter stuff that needs to mellow you out, is not for your palate. But this is surprisingly sweet
and
without being chlorine. So give us some other guesses of what's in there.
Something orangey. Orange juice.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, you're so like pleased. An expert.
There's orange juice. Is there a wee bit of orange juice? Okay. What else?
Oh, I don't know what else there is. That's all. Hang on. Let's go again. Oh, hang on. I know what's in it. Maple syrup.
Yes. Because you brought it.
Because I brought it.
Because I had to text Emma and go, have you got any maple syrup? Can you please bring some? So there you go. So that's where the sweetness comes from.
Oh, is that all that's in it?
Well, no, there's two, three other things. The third thing, there's a dash of bitters in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But there's two other things. One, I don't think you're going to get.
Regret?
Well, maybe after these.
With a pinch of fear?
There's another citrus.
Oh, lemon.
Lemon, yes.
Okay.
Well done.
I was just naming citruses. That wasn't based on taste.
And any other guess of the most random thing you can think of that you've heard on the show?
Oh, no. I don't know, genuinely.
Benedictine.
I don't know what that is. It sounds, whatever it is, it sounds holy.
Herbally, twiggly, nice though. I like Benedictine.
Okay.
So Benedictine's a liqueur made by monks.
Yeah, I was going to say, Benedictines are monks, aren't they?
Yes.
Am I going to have some sort of religious revelation after drinking this?
Hopefully wow, you will. That is the intention. That's why they made it.
Wow, for me specifically to have a religious revelation.
This is the bottle they sent over. I had to brew up an extra Uber batch and go, there's no saving her. Wow. Jesus. So that is the French diamond. So cognac and Benedictine. And then
it does taste diamondy. Yeah.
Grates on the teeth.
Yes, I think in cocktail circles that's the correct term.
I'm really pleased with the way that came out.
No, I think it's nice, genuinely.
Because I was afraid that that was going to be horrific for you.
Yeah.
It was the French, they know what they're doing.
I definitely couldn't drink a full one. God, purely Jesus, because no. I don't drink cognac on a regular basis.
But I also made you, and you're under no obligation to finish these, but I made you a second drink just in case this one was too brown.
So this second drink is a sort of a lovely pinky red colour.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna
dive in.
It's some sort of margarita.
It might be, yes.
So it's a version of a margarita. But I don't know what version of a margarita it is.
It is one I have made up.
Oh, nice. It yes. looks beautiful.
So I know you like a margarita mm-hmm. as your chosen drink. So it's a classic margarita with one little twist based on...
The blood of your enemies.
It is a guillotine meets a margarita.
No way. That's cool. And we all know the French love a guillotine.
They do. Yes. Yeah. So we have the French diamond and the guillotine meets a margarita, which is basically the name I made up on the spot. But that has a dash of creme de cassis in it.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Which is an ingredient we used on an episode a little while back where we were talking about executioners and the guillotine. And this is an area we're going to revisit this week.
Oh, I love an execution.
Yeah. You love a good execution. Oh, you love coming out for a good hanging, don't you? Yes. So we have our drinks in hand. We're okay with the French diamond. We'll take that on a walk.
Yeah, that was fine.
Yeah. And we also have the guillotini margarita.
I feel like the French diamond is a type of drink where if you're battered at the end of a night and you're like, do you know what I'm going to make? I'm going to make a French diamond. And I swear it's really good. No, it's really good. It's really good. No, cognac is really good. And then you wake up in the morning, you're like, why the fuck was I making fucking French diamonds at 3 o'clock this morning?
It does feel like a sophisticated drink if you're trying to be sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And if you get it right, it'll be lovely. But oh God, no, don't do that at 3 a.m.
No,
cognac never ends a night well.
I used to work in a hospital and a couple of the older women used to swear to me that brandy and port at the end of a night would leave you with no hangover.
It's because you're still pissed the next day.
And I never was sober enough at the end of the night to remember to try the brandy and port. So we shall never
That's
know.
That's the thing that really ruined you, isn't it? Oh, if only I'd remembered to have another shot of really hard liquor.
Brandy and port.
Brandy and together?
Together, yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
That's because you're wasted the next day.
Yeah.
They were in charge of people's health, wandering around neck and brandy and port.
I also worked in a pub in Dublin and a man came in one morning when I opened at like 10 o'clock and literally was like, throw up some brandy and ports there, will you? And I was like, oh God, you're not okay.
Now I kind of want to try it.
Apparently it is genuinely a nice drink to drink, but I can't ever imagine that it would be.
No, but that's a bit like people who say red wine and Coke.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is a nice drink. I know it's really popular in Spain. In certain countries, but I can't. Why would you do that?
Yeah, but my drink of choice for years was Jägermeister and Diet Coke on ice. So I have zero palate.
You did drink a lot of Jägermeister. Yeah. Well, we have our drinks in hand. Are you ready for a story, Emma?
I am ready for a story. I'm excited.
Now, earlier this week, Emma, we took a little trip to the cinema.
Yes, we did.
We did. And we went to see the latest blockbuster by Sir Ridley Scott.
Yes,
give him
did.
His full title, one of the greatest directors of all time. We went to see Napoleon. Now, you do love to do a film review.
Yes, I do.
On your show. Now, you do horror films.
Yes, I do.
You have to do horror films because you're a ghost or anything. Do give us a quick verdict on Napoleon for those who haven't seen it.
I like
this story is not about Napoleon, by the way, but there's a link. Trust me. Not just chatting.
I was pleasantly surprised. I thought I was going to find it really boring. It didn't feel like 3 hours long and it was very good. However, I will say I've not been able to get the image of Joaquin Phoenix furiously humping
Josephine,
whoever the actress was that played Josephine from behind. It was the least. I don't like sex scenes in cinema anyway. It makes me uncomfortable. But when it happened, I literally turned Sinead and I was like, what the fuck?
It's not sexy.
No,
I
don't think sexy.
It's not meant to be. The actress, the look on her face.
Rolling her eyes, basically.
Just like vacant look. It's absolutely. She deserves an Oscar for that scene, just of conveying the absolute disdain for. oh, okay, this will soon be over. But a very, very good film. I thought the battle sequences, absolutely amazing.
And what I said to you afterwards is that those battle sequences, what they really highlight is how just gruesome. I love that battle was hand-to-hand combat. Do you know what I mean? If you survive the first wave of shots, you're just running in to batter people. Yeah. It's just hideous. Question, though, before we get into your story.
Okay.
Was Napoleon hot?
In the film or what? No, he wasn't hot. No, he wasn't. No.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. In the film, watching it, okay, right. Let's call a spade and Napoleon. That in the film, Joaquin Phoenix, I don't find Joaquin Phoenix particularly sexy, but he's got something about him. And in that, a big sort of warmongering general, it's all very not okay. But yeah, he's got an air about him.
See?
In the film. See? And you kind of go... Mm. But then you see him shagging his Josephine and it's like, oh, this would less not be
so.
Pleasant.
No, yeah, no, no less no. so. You know, I think that Joaquin Phoenix played him really well. As sort he of did. A sociopathic warmonger, but in a very almost endearing kind of way.
But underplayed
you tell me,
it.
Right, that if you were on Tinder, right, I know that you're married. If you were on Tinder and you saw...
Napoleon
and
obviously.
I'm sure you have like a bio or something on Tinder. I don't know. I'm not on Tinder, but it says warmongering general. Are you not saying that you're going to be a little bit...
I'd be intrigued. Be if Napoleon did come up, I probably would swipe because I'd be like, really? Okay, interesting. Yeah. What? Where is this going to lead?
Now you see.
And then so, you have a chat.
Post-cinema, you laughed at me when I said that Napoleon was hot. And now look, you're considering it.
Because there's the moral side of my brain. There's the moral side of my brain of Napoleon being a warmongering murderer. A lot of people died. Horrific. But then also, you know, Darth Vader's hot. And he wiped out Alderaan.
Darth Vader is very hot. And at the beginning of Napoleon, when the French are rushing in to blow up the English, they look like they've got Darth Vader helmets on. So tell me that's not a link.
Someone was doing the costume design going, no, it made them look like Darth Vader because people fancy Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And now they're all just going to be horny all the way through this film. Yes, that was it. Are. That's what set it up at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So having said, we won't go off on tangents.
I was literally just about to say that. This whole not going on tangents thing has gone well.
So this story is not about Napoleon, but at the beginning of the film, and it's no spoiler to tell you this, that it features the execution of everyone's favorite extravagant queen, Marie Antoinette, who was beheaded in 1793 during the Reign of Terror during the French Revolution. It's the end of one regime and the coming of many, many more shenanigans. But since the lopping off of her head is firmly in our minds, I thought it was a good idea to tell the story of how Marie ended up on the block. And hold on to your hats, everyone, because this is not going to be a breakdown of the French Revolution. Dear God, no. No, 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 no. I do not have the energy. I do not have the time. I don't have the blood in me to do that.
But we could do it. I know that Les Mis isn't technically the French Revolution, but we could do it in song.
We could do, get you to break into song at any point. Mm-hmm. That any time the story resonates with a song from Les Mis. But I will do what I can along the way. But there is a very, very famous, very fabulous scandal. A scandal that is widely acknowledged as one of the deciding factors in Marie Antoinette's downfall. And it is a tale of a con artist.
Ooh.
Of sex.
Ooh.
Of fraud.
Ooh.
And some very, very lovely diamonds.
Oh, all of my favourite things.
All of your favourite things. You love a con artist with sex. And wearing diamonds. If only Darth Vader had worn diamonds.
Have you been on my Tinder again?
I thought you weren't on Tinder. Because Napoleon's not on there.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you're doing, searching. Shit. Guys, put on a hat and crouch. Yeah. That's all you need to do. Anyway, to the story. It all starts with Louis XV, so the previous king. His mistress, Madame de Barry. Now, Louis loved his mistress. She was a commoner by birth. She was a former prostitute. She was very charming and she was very talented. Knew her way around the king's jewels. Way. Loved a pretty dress. I like the fact that you laugh at my puns and Nick doesn't.
Nick has no soul.
Nick just goes, really? Really? Loved her pretty dresses and shiny things. Had a very interesting life, actually, Madame de Barry, but there's no time to go into her story now. And she was only one of his mistresses. She wasn't the lead mistress. There was actually officially a title for the lead mistress of the king.
That's crazy. Mm. I mean, obviously, like, we know what happened and, you know, probably still happens in some monarchies and whatever. How do you have the time?
Oh, they have the time.
How do you have the time to be running a country and then riding rings around yourself with mistresses that you've got? So many mistresses that they need titles.
They have titles.
To discern mistresses from each other.
They have apartments in the palace. Oh, they have crazy. Other palaces. You have to give them stuff. You just basically ride up and see them. And some of them you didn't even really have sex with. Some of them they didn't have sex with. They were just favour, and then it was all a sort of political movement. But Madame du Barry, she was definitely someone he had sex with. And he was so fond of her. He decided he was going to create a diamond necklace for her that would surpass all others. It would be the finest necklace ever made.
So he must have really loved her then.
Well, she loved beautiful things, and he was going to show his wealth there. And he goes to the Parisian jewellers, Beaumère and Bessange. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. There will be a lot of French in this bit. Usually we encourage Nick to do lots of French accents. Weigh in if you want, Emma. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's no offence here, hopefully. So this is France. Okay, you want the finest diamond necklace known to man. Okay, well, we have our work cut out for us. So the necklace would take years to make, to source the diamonds. And these had to be diamonds that were going to dazzle anyone when they saw them. And this isn't like the sort of necklaces, even the image I've used on Instagram. This isn't just like a delicate sort of string of diamonds. This is dripping with ribbons. There's ribbons in there as well, randomly. It contained just under 650 diamonds. The full weight was 2,800 carats.
Shit.
It's estimated. Tassels, pendants. So you have that pendants, basically the dripping kind of like, you know, so they're dangling down, and you have a, like 17 rows all together of all of these diamonds as big as hazelnuts, some of them, centered around like the queen of diamonds. So they had sourced the queen of all diamonds, essentially the biggest diamond. Now, whether it was the biggest diamond in the world, there's all sorts of records about what's the largest diamond ever. But they had something. So it was bougie, to say the least. And they finished it, polished it up. Great. Excellent. We have made the diamond necklace. Only one problem. It has taken so long to make that Louis XV has died.
Oh.
Not waiting for the necklace.
Oh, okay.
No, he wasn't sitting outside in the waiting room.
Yeah.
And they went like, oh,
someday, one more dawn.
No, he died of other things.
I'm curious to know, right? I don't know if you're going to know the answer to this specific question. Who thought ribbons were a good idea to add to the necklace? I appreciate the diamonds, right? Yeah. But at what point do you go, do you know what really screams money? Ribbons.
Ribbons. It's more sort of the drapery, I think, at the time. And these would have been ribbons made of French silk.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't. So, okay, right. That makes way more sense. I was like, who designed this? A four-year-old.
What they got from Card Factory.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, right. I take it back then.
So the ribbons would be a way of tying it as well. I'm not sure about whether they had the clasps. They had fastening mechanisms, certainly at that sort of time. But the ribbons would be part of your outfit and your dress, but it's silk. So when you look at it now, at pictures, you kind of go, well, there's these ribbons in it. You're like, no, but these were fine ribbons, lovely.
It's basically just showing off we can have the best of everything, all of it.
All of the time. So what are the jewelers going to do with the most expensive necklace ever made in France, in the world? We'll offer it to the new king, Louis XVI. Yay! He is a lovely bride, Marie Antoinette. And Marie Antoinette is famously extravagant by this stage. She loves shiny, shiny things.
Wouldn't you be furious if you were the mistress who was meant to get that necklace in the first place? You'd be like, I'm sorry. So you're giving my necklace to Marie Antoinette? Oh, no way. I wouldn't have it.
Oh, she was.
I'd be like, queen or no queen.
Without the king to pay for it and to gift it to her officially, she had no status.
No.
After that. And once he died, she was exiled.
Oh, no,
kicked out. Marie Antoinette and her did not get on. Even before Marie Antoinette became queen, Madame du Barry, she had sway because she was such a favourite of the king, and they fell out. This is a side note here. But Marie Antoinette didn't like her, and everyone was saying, you need to make friends with her. You need to make friends with her, because otherwise you're going to piss off the current king and you're going to be queen. And they didn't speak for ages until one day Marie Antoinette at the Palace of Versailles went up to Madame du Barry and just deigned her with one sentence of going, there seem to be a lot of people at Versailles today. And everyone went, oh, it's fine. They've cured the rift. That's fine. She spoke to her. And Marie Antoinette went, okay, fine. You've spoken to me. As soon as Marie Antoinette became queen, exiled her.
Yeah, and Marie Antoinette is like, I'm going to exile you and look at my lovely necklace.
Well, she didn't have the necklace. No, the necklace is just sitting in the jeweler's. Wow. But they want to ask the king, will his new wife accept it? But let's have a little look at Marie Antoinette at this stage. So why does Marie Antoinette have this reputation of being such the extravagant queen that we all know and love her for and go, what are the rumors? So she was the daughter of the Holy Roman Emperor, Francis I, and Empress Maria Theresa, who's a very imposing woman, and she's from Austria. So she's born and raised in Austria, one of about 17 million children. Not really. They had 16 kids.
Well, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Everyone had a lot of kids back then. So she was born Maria Antonia, grew up in Austria, hung out with Mozart when she was a kid.
Oh!
Nice. Nice.
That's a cool fact.
It is. Yeah. Not the brightest bulb in the shop in terms of her schooling. Lovely singing voice. Good at playing music, very pretty. Though people would say, later scholars would remark on the people who knew her and who tutored her and said she just didn't want to learn. She was bored. Mm. But she was clever.
Yeah.
She was bright and she was charming. That was the thing about
her.
So
a different kind of clever, not book clever.
Slow to clever. With her reading and writing in different languages because she was just bored. And she sort of, no. But clever in another sense. But she's only ever going to be a political pawn if she is the daughter of the Holy Roman Emperor. Her mother promised her to Louis XV's grandson. Little thing here, the son would die before he got to ascension. So Louis XVI, it's a thing.
Okay.
She's promised to the French royal family allegiance, France and Austria. Big thing. So they have to show this gesture. She was married by proxy in April 1770. So her husband wasn't there. She had a ceremony and her brother stood in for...
Shut up. I did not know marriage by proxy was a thing.
With the royals.
Of course, it's going to happen, but... He's not. He's actually busy today.
He's busy today, so your brother's going to stand in. But you're married. You're married now.
That is wild.
Now, they would have an official ceremony, but she's like, I just married my brother. Don't kiss me, Jesus. A month later, she met her husband after she was officially married to him. Met him in the woods outside of Versailles, and then they had their official ceremony at Versailles. She's 14, he's 15. Normal at the time.
Yeah.
Nice detail about the big day. And this is from the archives of... the Chateau de Versailles, obviously the palace. I've never been there. I've always wanted to go. I'm like, oh, let's go. Let's have a weekend. At the ceremony, her wedding gift from the king in their apartments was a splendid carved cabinet containing an abundance of jewellery and precious objects. I don't know what the objects are.
Yeah, I want to know what they are. Why did nobody get you that for your wedding or get me that for my wedding? Where was that
just
shiny object?
Just shoving a cabinet up the aisle. Here we are. Here is jewels and objects. What are the objects? I mean, you got your little kind of coaster and a paperweight. People love paperweights.
I'd be like, you know what? I thought these objects were going to be better.
Apparently the celebrations, again, we'll come back to the wedding night here, but the celebrations of their marriage, there was a small detail that said they carried on for several days. And there was a series of fireworks that killed 132 people.
Sorry?
I don't know. This one detail that the Palace of Versailles reported back going, 132 people were killed by fireworks.
What, did the fireworks come alive and murder them? Just go on a rampage?
It's like Beauty and the Beast, very dark.
After the first person has died due to firework. Surely you'd be like, we need to make some changes around
here. It must have been a display. I don't think one firework went off.
But what fireworks were you using if 130 whatever people died?
Gunpowder, like clearly. It was just cannons and guillotines.
What? Yeah, they're guillotines and cannons being thrown up into the air.
Shit.
Exploding. Let's see what happens. They're only peasants. It's fine.
On the wedding night itself, you love this, feast, then bedtime. And of course, there is the bedding, the official bedding. You know what bedding is?
What, like having sex?
No, you know where the entire court come in.
Oh my God, to watch them. Please don't tell me that they actually...
This is a thing with particularly nobility and the royals. So the court has to come in. In this case, the Archbishop of Reims blesses the bed, make it holy. And they have to all witness them getting into bed. They'll pull the curtains... They're allowed to. Beforehand, Louis XV, his grandfather, gives him his own nightshirt. And then Marie has a nightshirt given to her by the current queen. And they go, here are the clothes we've worn. Get into bed.
These are our sex clothes.
These are our sex clothes.
They've brought us great luck in the bedroom.
We had kids. And then they're all supposed to go in, and the bedding is that they can lay together in the bed next to each other. Now, there are some reports that in other cases that they watch them have sex and lose their virginity, but the curtains are closed and they're all like, okay. And yeah, they're, yep, totally doing it. Absolutely fine. lying together, we're in bed. They weren't. They weren't. According to reports, the marriage was unconsummated for 7 years.
So I know that culturally there are cultures and places where it is customary for the village, as in the relations, to stand outside the room, yes, on the wedding night, etc., etc. So in the case of the royals in this period of time, was it to ensure that the marriage was consummated, to ensure that the marriage was legitimate? Is that, yes, what it was about?
Yeah, in slightly older times, it was to be seen that was it consummated, so that there would be an heir. The idea that you have sex once, there will be pregnancy.
Yeah.
So that they can lay together in the same bed, it's all fine, it's consummated, this is now a holy marriage. Doesn't matter if you don't get pregnant or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's to witness it. So it's gross.
So 7 years the marriage wasn't consummated.
Yeah,
for.
They were married, as I said, in 1770. King Louis XVI would ascend to the throne in 1774. Marie would become Queen of France, and she takes the name Marie Antoinette. She takes the French styling. But no heirs for 7 years after they had first shagged. First 3 years is fine, but now that they've been crowned, come on. Now everyone is just prodding them. Come on. There has to be an heir. There has to be.
Because it was massive, wasn't it? Like your whole royal ascension depended on you having an heir rather than anything else. You couldn't even enjoy your time on the throne.
No.
Because everybody's like, where's my son?
And that's the wife's duty. That's her role. She will have some political standing and she will have influence at court, but she's also got to shoot out babies.
Yeah.
That's it. And a lot of babies. A lot of babies.
Do you know how babies are born? Because I don't think they shoot out of anybody.
They thought they did.
Actually, Emma, I think you're fine.
I think you're fine. They just machine gunning out of there. If they can calm the womb back into place for five seconds, then there'll be babies. But this is going to start rumours. If they've not had a baby within the first year, 3 years after the coronation, 7 years after they've been married, there's going to be rumours. The king can't get it up. The wife is a dud.
Yeah.
The king is obviously not that interested in his wife, according to some reports. So Marie starts just sort of looking around elsewhere for fun, really. Not necessarily having an affair, as obviously loads of people said she definitely did. She's been very popular as the young wife, and she leans on that popularity, and she's enjoying parties and she's enjoying gambling and drinking. She is enjoying the life of a queen and the life of a hostess and the life of complete revelry. And this is where the ongoing rumours about her extravagance come out. And it was well documented about how extravagant she was, because that's how all the kings and queens lived. She was famous for her fashion, her style and her spending. The Palace of Versailles is not enough. Obviously, you get your own little chateau in the grounds and then another chateau somewhere. You're just given properties. That's what happens. You just say, here's a house. You're the wife. Have several. One of the cottages she had, she apparently decorated with gold and diamonds on the wall. Stunning.
Love her.
Finest of clothes, even by a queen standard. She had her own stylist create very extravagant dresses. She had 300 dresses each year because she would only wear one once. That's the dream, isn't
it? I love her energy. And I also think she's very young. Like, they're very young. Mm. And this is a lot. You've got all the money in the world to play with. If I was, you know, in my late teens, early 20s as a queen, you best believe that I am going to be extravagant.
Absolutely. She's going to lean into it. And she makes particular choices with her fashion that would have a huge impact on society. Now, obviously, anything the queen wears is going to have an effect, but this had a lasting effect. She made the colour puce very popular.
Oh, interesting.
And it wasn't really the done thing at the time, but she wore puce. And this is the days of wide skirts for a long time, ruffles for days and all the corsets. But she also championed muslin, sort of made of muslin dresses and chemise. Dresses, so white sort of shift dresses loose, because she wouldn't have to wear a corset when she was kicking around.
Yeah.
And she quite liked that. She was like, I'm just going to wear this. It's a pretty simple shift dress. It's sexy. People are like, the queen should not wear this. We can see her figure. We can see it's white. There's nothing else. Of course, there was the hair.
Yes.
So in the early days, 3 foot hair, 3 feet high it was, using wires, sticks, anything else to hold that shit up. She had her own hairstylist who was famous across the land and who was very, very happy to do the stuff. And then it would be covered in ornaments. So big plumes of feathers she liked.
Oh.
Boats, ships, cannon. Little tiny mini cannons, huge cannons.
She's shooting peasants
yes,
with her hair cannons.
They would. We've spoken of it before on the show, but this is how extravagant the hair pieces would be. You just covered them with ornaments and little bits and pieces. And if you were the queen, you could do what you like because it's a statement piece.
Yes.
She would say she would dress as an actress to go out so people could hiss at her.
She honestly, she is a bit of a vibe.
Style icon. Now, the country at this time, we are all building up to the French Revolution. So at this time in her life, there is the rising poverty, the cost of bread, obviously supplies, people finding it very easy to start turning against a very extravagant queen, where they tolerated this for years beforehand. And despite her supposed kind nature, they feel like, okay, when we see the monarchy doing this, you're driving the country into debt. That's a very succinct way of doing it, but that's the feeling that is emerging. And
if you can't feed your family, it doesn't matter how kind the queen is, if she's got fucking cannons and feathers in her hair and a house made of gold and diamonds, you're going to be like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be leading your people and we're dying out here.
In the build up to the French Revolution, peasants are sort of 80%, like the majority of the country. And then the upper classes, the middle classes, are spending and being really extravagant and enjoying the Enlightenment, enjoying everything that comes with it. And they're feeling like, well, we're just going to go for the monarchy. And we don't like absolute power. And we don't like this regime. We are starving. Very short way of saying it. And there's a lot more nuance behind it. So this sentiment is building up and she's the symbol of it for a time. And, you know, the other monarchy around it. Eventually, she starts producing children. 1778, she has her first child, makes the public very happy. Apparently, the only reason they started consummating their marriage is that her brother, the king's brother-in-law, had a little chat with him. And, enjoy this. The brother would later recount what the king had said to him, and he said, what are you doing in the bedroom? Why haven't you had an heir? And he described their process as he introduces the member, but stays there without moving for about 2 minutes, then withdraws without having completed the act and bids goodnight.
Oh,
just leave it there for a bit.
Oh, no. I don't even know how I can even make jokes about that. The jokes make themselves.
What? Good night. At least he said good night.
Yes.
That's very polite.
Yes. What?
So Joseph has a few words of going, here's the essential bits that you're missing. Suddenly, babies galore. He was like, oh, really? All the way in? And out again? And then
I find it wild that
that is the rumor. People can make all sorts of assumptions about why they didn't get it on. But then she did start producing children, and it seems like a horrible thing to say, the way of saying it, but then she fell pregnant.
Something changed.
Critics would have it that she had then at that moment started having an affairs, and were her children the king.
I didn't even think of that.
It does seem, being really blunt about it, why wouldn't have heirs appeared beforehand?
Yeah.
Why would she have chosen that period of time? But it's also seemingly ludicrous that the king did not know how to have sex.
But that almost sounds like negative propaganda as well. Do you know what I mean? The king is so ludicrous that he didn't know how to have sex. You know what I mean?
Stories on both sides get very warped over the years. But even with her children, her apparent decision as well, she became much more devout to her children. She toned down all the extravagance, wore very plain stuff. She toned down the hair. The hair was quite short. Actually, she'd lost a lot of her hair as well because of ill health and also childbirth. The hair fell out. Mm. Her popularity was declining. She was the subject of gossip. Pamphlets were being produced based on all of her sexual exploits with various members of the court and people that she knew. And all sorts of rumours are going around and people laughing at her. The extravagant, stupid, lascivious and foreign queen. She was Austrian.
Yes, she was Austrian, of course.
Good time to drop in a little factoid for those who've been shouting at their phone. Do you know the phrase that's associated with Marie Antoinette?
Well, because she famously, allegedly said, let them eat cake. But she didn't, did she? Apparently not true.
No, she didn't. So this was a phrase that was attributed to her in the height of the revolution, that when she heard people were starving on the streets, she flippantly said, let them eat cake, because they couldn't afford bread. Oh, how cruel, what a horrible bitch. Then it changed into, was she actually saying, qu'ils mangent de la brioche? So brioche is buttery, eggy bread. And there was actually a law at the time that made the price of brioche the same as bread. She was like, well, just let them have an alternative.
Yeah.
But none of this is true. She didn't say it. It was only 50 years after she died that someone attributed a quote that was written by a writer, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, I believe his name is, who referred to a great princess saying the words, let them eat cake.
Yeah.
About her peasants. And then everyone went, that's Marie Antoinette.
And of course, she's been seen as living this extravagant lifestyle
she would be likely to say something like, let them eat cake, because she's so out of touch. She's the out of touch
Absolutely.
Queen, of course.
So it's very easy to attribute to her. There is no evidence that she said that at all. So that's why cake couldn't be the ingredient this week, even though we've said it many times. But even without cake-based insults, Marie and the monarchy are facing trouble because of the affair of the diamond necklace. So it is now 1784. The jewelers, Beauret and Bazenges, have this huge necklace. They're desperate to unload. They think the new king...
Shit, I forgot about the necklace. Oh, yeah.
You see how I bring it back?
Yeah, well, that was good storytelling. Well done. Well done.
Drew you in. Yeah, it's just really Marie did. Antoinette is fascinating. I love writing about this sort of time period and delving into it, even though it's just scratching the surface. Back to the necklace. They are going to approach King Louis XVI. Hello, you've noticed that your wife, she loves shiny shit. She loves fancy, fancy stuff. Would you like this necklace that costs 2 million livres? That is equivalent of about 11 million pounds today. Some have put it down as 100 million pounds. Might be, might be. They're like, fancy, fancy necklace fit for a king. You're the only people who can afford this.
Dear king. God, please take this necklace. We spent years making it.
King goes, nah, I'm good. I'm good. They're like, okay, we'll sweeten the deal. We'll drop the price to 1.6 million livres. Okay, you're not hearing me right now. No, doesn't want it. Doesn't want it. Now, depending who you listen to, there's three versions of that. Some say the queen herself turned it down because at this time she's saying we need more battleships than we do necklaces. We should not be spending the money on necklaces. We need to be spending the money on ships.
Well, she was not wrong.
Yeah. Noble. Good. Good. The king just going, no, I don't want to spend any money on her. And she's jumping up and down behind him going, but I want it. I want it. I want it. I want it. Or the third option is, I don't want the cast-offs of Madame du Barry.
Well, I have to say, as the resident petty bitch on this podcast, I would either be like, I don't want her cast-offs, or I'd be like, give me the necklace, and then I'd take selfies in the necklace and post them on social media.
Bring her back to court.
Yeah, I'd be
equivalent.
Like, oh, hi, just wanted to see how you were and catch up, and I'm just wearing the necklace and nothing else.
So whichever version, let's go with that one. I don't want her cast offs.
But
so,
I also like the battleship version because I like the idea that she's reasonable, that she's recognizing that, you know, France is at war a lot of the time in this period of history with England, and England famously, as Napoleon said, they fight war at sea.
Yeah.
And she's thinking, hang on, we need to figure this out, and that's what we're spending money on. I like that version of her.
Yeah, let's go with that. I do also like the petty bitch.
I like the petty bitch too.
The jeweler made a scene at court. Beaumont apparently was sobbing his eyes out, yelling, swooning, and threatening to do away with himself unless the queen took the necklace off his hands. Didn't work.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be that interested. Have you, you know the bit in The Emperor's New Groove where he's like, sorry, am I supposed to care that you don't have a, what is it? And the peasant is like, Food. That's what I feel like it's like in the courtroom.
Very much so. So shitting shit, the jewelers now go, okay, we have to get rid of this thing and the king doesn't want it. We need to make our money back. Enter Jeanne de Valois-Saint-Rémy, also known as the Comtesse de la Motte.
Ooh.
I think that's time for a drink.
Yeah, let's do it.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Emma, we have our drinks. I have my drink.
I have my drink too.
Yay.
What are you drinking for your second half?
Oh, I just got a G&T. Oh. I would have made another cocktail, but there's a lot. So we are with Jean de Valois Saint-Rémy. Good name, good name, good name. I'm going to call her Jean from here on in. I can't keep doing that. So let me tell you a bit about Jean. So she was born into poverty, but from a noble family.
Ish.
Her father was a descendant of Henry II of France. So King Henry II, he's a descendant from one of Henry's illegitimate but acknowledged children. So they are nobility, but daddy is a drunkard and a gambler, and he sort of throws his money away. So his children, he has six children, three of them die, but Jean is one of the ones who lives, surprisingly, and they grow up sort of barefoot, begging, not in a good way. But they end up sort of being rescued by good benefactors. And there is the easiest way to describe this at Palais de Versailles. They have a kind of a program to benefit the children of noble families who have no money. But she is basically rescued by this, and she ends up getting an allowance of 900 livres a year. And she's sent to a convent, like getting an education. So she's sort of taken care of because she's a descendant of Henry, Henri. And they send her off to sort of this convent to get an education. She doesn't want to be a nun. No, she doesn't want to be a nun. She is going to go and have a good time. And she's going to run around, and she's going to use her wiles to have a lot of fun. She marries a man named Marc Antony Nicolas de Lemont while she's 8 months pregnant. Whether it's, we don't know. She unfortunately would lose those children that she was pregnant with. Her husband claimed to have noble blood. Whether he did or not, it's debatable. But they chose to style themselves as the Comte and Comtesse.
These sound like my kind of people.
They're just going to go with it. Go with it. Husband not really providing enough money, but she wants a fancier lifestyle. So she's going to find ways of supporting them. So she's going to mix with the wealthy people. She's going to, again, use her wiles, use her cunning to talk to everyone and ingratiate herself into court. And she's also got ideas that she can probably ask for a larger allowance from the king and queen themselves, and she can get an audience with them. She has these sort of delusion that she can have an audience with Marie Antoinette. No way that that's going to happen. Marie Antoinette is like, who's this woman? Her attendants will tell her. And she's like, is she of low birth? But no. We're not talking to her. But she's going to work her way around court otherwise. She was described as being slender with small breasts. Which was nice at the time.
Interesting.
Yes.
Nothing else about her matters.
White skin.
Oh, okay.
Chestnut brown hair. Limpid blue eyes. Like limpid pools.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, yeah, because these descriptions are not... they're not
today,
working on me.
Like,
because what? What's going on there? She's not hot. I'm not swiping for her on Tinder.
She had a winning smile.
Well, put that in your bio when I think about it.
I'm slender with very small breasts. She probably would look great in clothes.
See, this is the thing, right? Paris Fashion Week, she's all over
it. My God.
Yeah.
She could run through a field.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. She would take a man named Ro de Villette as her lover. He was a con man and a pimp.
Can I just say, everybody in Paris at this time, right? Everybody's having lovers.
Yeah.
How are you surviving poverty and having a lover?
You need to shag.
I'm not saying you don't need to shag. But I feel like your time is taken up with trying to survive, but yet you still have a husband and a lover.
That's because when you get hungry, it consumes your day entirely. It does. You can't cope.
No, I can't. No, I really
They've lived with it. They're just a bit hungry all the time. She's skinny with small breasts. Everyone loves it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's working on that look.
Okay.
And not only that, like the lover, like the husband knows they all live together. It's menage a trois.
Oh, God, I hate this so much.
They're all shagging.
They're not my kind of people. I take it back.
Why was that the line?
Because I can't even watch people having sex on films, right? It gives me the ick. So I'm not living in a house with people having a menage a trois, okay?
That's too much admin.
It's too much admin.
You're hungry. You're grouchy.
And I'm always going to be worried that somebody's going to kick off.
Right,
I'm always going to be worried that something's going to be the step too far. Do you know what I mean? And then I'm just going to be in the middle of this row that I never consented to and I didn't want to be in the middle of in the first place. And I would have said from the beginning, I don't think it's a good idea to conduct this affair so publicly. I would have said that from the beginning, okay?
I'm sure that was going through her mind. Sure, I think perhaps they've thrown caution to the wind. They're like, we're starving, but we're fancy.
Care.
And we're going to try and screw over the Queen of France.
Yeah, they really have big ambitions. But anyway.
So she tried to gain an audience with the Queen, as I said, didn't really work. So she makes her way around court as best she can. And she meets the prestigious Cardinal de Rohan. Now, the Cardinal is from a good family. He is a Cardinal. He has the ear of the Pope. Doesn't live a particularly holy life.
No, they didn't really in them days.
Not really. Many, many, many lovers and partying and everything. And he meets her, instantly smitten. She will be his mistress. Absolutely. Now, he had once been the French ambassador to Vienna. So he had met Marie Antoinette's mother, Maria, spectacularly failed to impress both of them. Having had quite a long-ish political and religious career, he completely messes up any relations there. He goes to Vienna. He talks to Marie Antoinette's mother about Marie Antoinette. That does not endear him to her. It's like, why are you telling my mother stuff? Even though we're close, don't tell her stuff. And then he also writes about Marie Antoinette's mother in correspondence, which is found out and gets back to the Queen, going, right, you're slagging off my mother now. So you are a dick. I don't want to see you at court. I can't ban you from court because you're from a prestigious family, but you are out of my favor. I want nothing to do with you. So, you know, you don't have to be banned from court or exiled, but it's enough to be like, oh, I am not in favor. And he is obsessed with getting back in. He is, I need to win her favor. This is awful. This is awful. And with Jeanne as his mistress, he confides all of this to her. He talks about how he's desperate to get back into the Queen's favour. Top tip, when you're with a woman, don't talk about the other woman that you're obsessed with.
But don't do that.
Well, no, but for Jeanne, she sees an opportunity. She comes up with a scheme, and I love this. She's already presented herself as a woman of nobility who has been welcomed to court. And she's made that very clear to the Cardinal. You know, I am absolutely accepted at court. And she tells him that she was graced with an audience with Marie, with the Queen, that we have met and we have corresponded and we have become good friends. And she brings the Cardinal copies of letters that the Queen has written to her. Humble as I am, we are writing to each other and I'm really very proud. And he looks at the letters and he's like, that's Marie Antoinette's handwriting. Oh my goodness. So you're my way in. You're my way in to the Queen. This is amazing. So I will use whatever influence I can to win the Queen over for you. And he believes every word and he's like, yep, keep writing to her. And like, can you get her to write to me? Of course the Queen's not written to her at all. Jeanne has taken it to her forger lover, the con man who's living with him, and he has faked Marie Antoinette's handwriting, whatever that could look like, vaguely looking like the Queen's handwriting and her signature. And the Cardinal believes every word of it. This beautiful, beautiful woman who seems to have noble birth, and she has got the confidence of Marie Antoinette. We can only assume that Jeanne is a master storyteller.
And famously small breasts.
Famously small breasts. Shout out to all the small titted ladies out there as well. We love you. We see you.
The itty bitty titty committee, I believe is the official term.
Cardinal sees no issues with his notes and he asks Jeanne, can I write to her as well? And she's like, yep. She has allowed it. She will accept letters. And in these letters, he expresses his absolute devotion to the Queen. He is so sorry for any wrongs in the past, his undying loyalty. And the Queen responds with kindness and warmth, such warmth that the Cardinal goes, oh my God, the queen is in love with me. She totally loves me. It's going so well. Jean is so happy for them. Oh my God, it's wonderful. I'm so glad I've orchestrated this. You know what would be really good? Is that if you give me whopping great sums of cash, I'll donate them to the Queen's charities, and that's going to curry favor even more. He's like, yes, take my money. Here's my wallet. Go, Jean, straight out. Living up in society, spending the cash, telling everyone that she is a good friend of the Queen's. Who's going to check? Who's going to check? No, absolutely. She is buying the drinks and she's walking the walk. Nobody worries about it. Nobody worries at all. And also, people fucking hate the Queen as well. So like, yep, love it. The letters continue and the Queen begins to tell the Cardinal of her struggles, particularly the fact that she wants to buy this famous diamond necklace forged for Louis XV. But her husband, Louis XVI, won't let her buy it. Cardinal sympathizes and maybe he could help to put up the cash and orchestrate this. But wouldn't it be wonderful if they can meet in person, under cover of darkness and in secret, just to be in her presence? He would do anything. Meet the queen you've been writing to. Okay, writes Jean. They orchestrate a meeting in the garden of the Palace of Versailles. The cardinal turns up under cover of darkness, allegedly, and he sees the queen there. He sees her. She's dressed in white, as she always did. Her beautiful, beautiful brown hair. And her head is bowed under her headdress. But it's her. It looks like her.
Clearly.
It's her. And she presents him with a rose, the exchange of rose, and a letter. She utters but a few words, like one or two words to him. But he is overjoyed. He reads the correspondence and he's just professing that he loves her and he will do anything for the loyalty of his queen. And she tells him, she has forgiven him of all his past indiscretions and they will be firm friends from there on in. It may shock you to learn that this is not the queen, Emma.
No way.
No, this is a prostitute named Nicole Lecuay d'Oliva.
So they've gotten somebody else involved to be like, you need to pretend to be the queen in the gardens of Versailles. Don't ask questions. All right, well, this is just a whole thing that we've got going on. And this woman is like, well, you pay me and I'll do it. Fine.
100%.
Oh my God, I love this. Cardinal needs a hobby.
Jean, this sex worker, Nicole, she did look like Marie Antoinette. It was remarked upon regularly. She was a spitting image. And Jean knows this. Hires her. She'd been hired many times to play the queen for people.
I bet she got great business playing the queen.
And she just thinks it's another gig. Yeah, apparently Nicole knows nothing about any of the intrigue behind it. She doesn't know that this cardinal's being conned. She is just there to play the Queen of France and stand there and look all coquettish. And the cardinal's saying all this. And she's like, it's just another little fetish. Yeah, fine.
Let's do that. I'll get him paid. What does it matter? Yeah.
I do like the fact that they sort of say she doesn't really speak that much, because I imagine her to have that Simpsons voice. Freshen your drink, governor! Hello.
He'd be like, something's not right here.
I know she's French, but she was definitely from the streets of Sussex.
Have you seen Les Mis? They're all Cockney.
Yes, that's a good
How
point.
How do you do? My name's Gavroche.
Well, she's singing a lot for a queen. Or she's not. Or she's English and she's going, bonjour. May we la sexy sex. But it works, Emma, it works.
Again, the cardinal needs a hobby.
The cardinal needs a hobby. This is his hobby now. After this meeting, the cardinal is firmly on board. He goes to Jean and he says, buy the necklace, make the arrangements, whatever the queen wants. I will help her get her this magnificent necklace, because he's a very wealthy man. And off Jean goes to the jewelers. Well, she's actually been there before, because she's been working with the jewelers. Not on this con, but she has been going to them and saying, I have influence with the court and I think I can help you make this deal with the queen.
And obviously he's been falling around the court, swooning and crying and throwing up and whatever, being like, please, dear God, take this necklace and give me the money. We spent years making it. So he's going to be like, oh, yeah.
Says to her, thank you. Do you want a commission? And she's like, oh, wait, I shouldn't. Oh, go on then. I'll take a commission for this. Goes to them, shows them letters from the queen, inverted commas, confirming she wants to buy the jewels. She cannot be seen spending such great sums of cash in this day and age. So the cardinal is going to act as the intermediary. Jean is there to help facilitate everything. It's all put through. In January 1785, the necklace is handed to the cardinal, who gives it to Jean to deliver to the queen. Of course, Jean just goes back to her husband. They smash it to pieces and they sell all of the jewels as best they can across Paris and London. Just divide it up, smash it up. Which was
clever,
something...
Because I was thinking, right, they're going to get this big fuck-off necklace. Like, what are they going to do with it? Like, how, you're not going to sell that. Nobody's going to have the money to buy it. People are going to know. And they broke it up. That's clever.
Sell it on the black market. Something that Marie Antoinette had suggested years before when the jeweler was saying, what do we do with this necklace? She was like, well, just break it up and just like sell the jewels on.
I can't believe they didn't.
I think they were convinced that they could sell it all for these millions. That was their folly. So the jewelers, time has come to pay. Where's my first installment? Cardinal's not giving them any money and nothing's coming from the queen. Okay, months pass with no payment. And the jewelers not only are expecting to have had money through from the cardinal, who is supposed to be paid by the queen, they should have seen these jewels out in society. People should have been talking about it. Her wearing these jewels out should have been the talk of the town. Irritated by this, the jewelers write to the queen. The queen throws letters away from them. Like, this is another ploy for me to get them to buy that fucking necklace. Until they write to a lady in waiting and say, why hasn't she worn these jewels out? And this was supposed to have been paid for. I'm really sorry, but whoever has bought these for you is not giving us the money. And they're like, what? What's going on? And they realize an elaborate ruse has been constructed. And the cardinal is invited to the palace in August that year. So sort of 8 months later. And he's so excited. He's so happy.
Do you know what? He's going to look like such a knob. I'm sorry.
Full robes.
She already hates him. Her ma even hates him. And now he's like, he's at the center of this necklace situation. What an absolute knob.
He's turned up in all of his robes, all his regalia.
I'm so embarrassed.
He's so happy. He comes into the Hall of Mirrors, the famous Hall of Mirrors in the Palais. And he's confronted by the king and the queen. He's like, yeah. He was supposed to officiate something that day, and the king confronts him and goes, what the hell is going on with this necklace? In so many words, what is he doing? He's trying to steal this necklace and you're blaming the queen. The king will have nothing said against the queen. They really, really are firm in their marriage. And this continues actually even after this scandal. They're very supportive of each other. And the cardinal splutters and goes, but the Comtesse Jean, she's the queen's good friend. I've just been only acting on the queen's wishes. The queen wanted this. And the king's going, what the... What are you saying about my wife? And he hands over a letter and he says, no, but she's written to me. Look, this is her handwriting. And the king, seething, looks at the letter and goes, you realize this is signed. It's a very fine detail here. Marie Antoinette de France. It's like, yeah. Royals never sign their full title. They use their baptismal name when they're signing letters. Why didn't you know that? You're a cardinal and you have preached about etiquette your whole life and you don't know how the royals sign a letter. And there's a really small detail, but as the king is standing there going, you should know this.
And if you were Marie Antoinette, you would stand there going, this is why nobody likes you.
And it's like, you believed this. It's such a small detail. And look at what's happened. So the cardinal is dragged away to the Bastille, ready for trial. He sends word home, destroy all my papers. I don't know whether they managed to or not. So the authorities then track down Jean. They track down her husband as well. They get Nicole, the prostitute. They also drag some people into it that the crown hated. And they blame for this court case that had nothing to do with it. There was a really weird aside that I won't go into massively. But there's a man, Count Alessandro di Cagliostro, I think... who was an occultist, a mystic, who did all sorts of weird occulty shit, and they wanted to get him for something. They put him in the Bastille for 9 months, accused of this, and he had nothing to do with it.
They were just like, you know that guy who does all the witchy shit? We hate that guy.
We grabbed him on the street. Yeah, come on, you! Yeah. And he's like, what? They let him out after a while, like, oh, you're fine, come on. The cardinal is judged by the judges in Paris, so he's judged by Parliament, not by the Pope. Pope got annoyed at that. Wrote to him and said, you should be judged by me. And all of this is not good news for the monarchy, even though the king and the queen say, no, you know, put the trial in public because we want our names cleared. Yeah. All this does is put this trial in the public eye. Could have been done behind closed doors. It's a sensation. The scandal of this necklace, of all of this plotting and this attempt to buy it and give it to the queen, but the queen knows nothing about it. It doesn't really matter to the public. Because they all think, no, the queen was behind it.
Of course they do, because they already don't like her.
They think she was the schemer. She was the one behind it. What ends up happening is Jean, the Comtesse, is found guilty of everything. She is whipped. She is branded on both shoulders with a V for the French word for thief.
Yeah.
And she's given life imprisonment to the prison of prostitutes.
Can I just say, the branding feels extraneous, considering
if you're getting life in prison. Yeah, there we go. That's what I
would
thought.
I would have thought the branding was like, you know, when you go forth in life, people will always know that you're a thief. If you're in prison, you're in prison, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, she's not in prison for long. Oh, a year later, she breaks out disguised as a boy.
Oh, I love her.
She fucks off to London.
Good for her.
Writes her memoirs. The rest of them, her lover is exiled. Her husband was found guilty in absentia. He wasn't even there. Condemned to be a galley slave.
Oh, God.
He didn't do anything, really.
He's just there.
Yeah, he's just there. Cardinal acquitted, just duped. He's an idiot.
In a way, that feels worse. It's more embarrassing to be like, I know, obviously, right? Nobody wants to be in prison for life. Nobody wants to be a galley slave, blah, blah, blah. But now everyone knows that you're a moron.
You're an absolute idiot. Even though he's acquitted, the king exiles him to one of the cardinal's own properties in the south of France. It's just like, just get out of our sight. He was never allowed back into court, as far as I can see, actually.
I'm going to say, in this time period, being exiled doesn't seem too bad.
It is. Go to your palace in the south of France.
No. Oh, please, no.
But to
don't
him...
Don't make me go to my palace with all my servants stuff there.
House arrest. Oh, I just sit here and have snacks.
You know, when we watched Napoleon and he was exiled to Elba, right?
Yeah.
Which apparently is a really nice island. Was it really that bad? And he's like, this is hell. I need to leave.
I'll come back to that. I have notes on that. But yeah, cardinal exiled. But he never got to get back into court. And that's what he wanted. Because the guy who was a social climber never got that. Nicole, the prostitute, cleared of all charges.
Yay!
She didn't do anything. She was just acting. She was the quitter.
Yeah.
They clearly thought, she's useful. As I said, Jean, she escaped. She would go to live in London. She died in London after falling out a window trying to escape some debt collectors.
Oh, no.
She died, I think
she did not learn.
2 years before the death of the Queen. Even though the Queen was found to be entirely blameless, the people of France firmly believed she was behind the entire plot. It was all they needed, the last straw for many, who saw the Queen as corrupt and a spendthrift. Her popularity plummeted after this. She rarely appeared in public again. Even though her and the king got closer, her reputation never recovered. And historians have credited the affair of the diamond necklace as the beginning of the end for the king and the queen. Marie Antoinette would go to the guillotine in 1793, 10 months after her husband had met the same fate.
It's mad to think that the final straw was genuinely something she had nothing to do with. You know, like, obviously there's a series of events. It's not just that one event that caused the public sway to change, etc., etc. And people didn't like her beforehand. They certainly weren't going to like her afterwards.
Yeah.
But I would be pissed off if I was Marie Antoinette. I'd be like, I actually wasn't involved in this. And this is the thing that's really going to make my popularity plummet. Yeah. Are you joking me? Never said let them eat cake. Never said that.
So
what's going on there? All right.
At the time, no one knew that that was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are divided, rightly or wrongly, that Marie Antoinette on one hand is just, she was a monarch. She was doing the same thing as other monarchs beforehand in the wrong place at the wrong time. Certainly extravagant, but is what the aristocracy had done, and then revolution came. And others do think that she didn't give a shit about the people. She was just being blind to the public outcry, to the poverty that was absolutely tearing through France, to the famine that had taken place at different times. This all built up to a revolution, and the revolution was absolutely just a cacophony and a bloody rhino crash of mania.
Yeah,
fight for the rights of the people. Ooh, it's gone a bit far.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. The reign of terror got a little bit much.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting into dictator status here, but it was people who had been starving.
Yeah.
Absolutely starving, and having to watch the aristocracy going, we're better than you.
And being so wildly out of touch, having no concept.
Yeah.
And in fairness, like, things, not to get political, but things aren't very different now. You've got people in power who, you know, have gone to private schools, who, not that there's anything wrong with going to private schools, that's not what I'm saying, but then they're in power and they're not aware
of yeah. what it is to go and buy a loaf of bread in yeah. the shop, like genuinely.
Or use a hammer.
Or use a hammer. And I keep seeing people being like, if you had any critical thought in your head, you would know that he was told to use it that way, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, shut up, I just want to laugh at him, all right? I just want to laugh at him. But then you
That's
end
the
up
UK situation,
with people being like, what? These people know nothing about what it's like to be a real person. Yeah. Living in this country, and
they
still
didn't. They didn't really have any concept of
no.
that.
And I can only imagine that everybody, you know, if you've got 80% of the people in France at that time are living in essentially in peasantry, right? Mm. You've got 80% of them.
And seeing the rising cost of stuff yeah. again, like we have now.
Yeah, and then I'd imagine if you're the monarchy and you're living the high life, and you're like, oh, but I'm having a really nice time.
Yeah.
And where do I start?
Yeah.
Where do I start? And they don't have any concept of being cold or on the streets or hungry. They have no they can't even imagine that because they've never lived that ever. So where do you start? You need an advisor to come in who's somebody who's like, you know, from the streets.
Also, like, just have the biggest palace that there is, Versailles. Just have that. Yes. Don't keep giving your wife more palaces. She got like several homes.
Yeah.
And people just heard about this. Like, oh yeah, it's another palace. And she's going to spend thousands decorating it. You don't blame people for kind of going, okay, that's it. Yeah, interesting points about her execution, which we did see in Napoleon.
Yes.
She was wearing a white dress. Her hair was white. It turned white from her time in prison and after her husband's death. Her hair was cut off when she went to the guillotine, and her last words were to the executioner, who was the son of Charles-Henri Sanson, who we featured on the podcast before. Ha ha, interesting. She stood on his foot accidentally.
Ah, yes.
And her last words were, please excuse me, I didn't mean that on purpose.
I actually knew that.
Yeah, she didn't mean to. She just, I'm not trying to be a
sorry,
bitch. But she walked out with great dignity, they said, and she was hurled abuse at. And
I guess
just,
it's the only thing she would have had left.
Well, people wanted her to scream and to beg for her life and everything. And she went up and that was it. But yes, that is the story of the affair of the diamond necklace. Da, da, da.
There was way too many people having sex with way too many people in that story.
Everyone was having sex with everyone. Yeah. It was France.
I like to be sex positive, but stop it.
Stop that. Stop having sex.
Because you know what happens? A revolution happens and loads of people will die.
Everyone gets horny and then everyone goes, we can have sex with everybody.
Yeah. And then people
or they kill everyone. Yeah. If you can't have sex with everyone, you kill everyone. And that's kind of what happened.
That sounds like it's exactly what happened.
But good note about Napoleon when he was exiled to Elba.
Yes.
And in the film, in St. Helena, they showed his lovely little house that he was staying in. And they made it all lovely white and lovely, you know, kind of voile curtains in there. No, he had a damp house. He had a damp house covered with sort of red flocked wallpaper. And people thought the wallpaper had arsenic in it.
Oh, and that's what killed him.
It wasn't what killed him. He did have respiratory and heart disease and stuff like that. He had arsenic in his system all his life. Probably would have been breathing it in or taking it in as various medicines. So people think that he was killed by his wallpaper. But he wasn't, in an Oscar Wilde kind of way.
Oh, yes. Yeah. This wallpaper goes where I do.
But every time they show sort of, it was white and clean. No, it wasn't. It was damp and it was horrible. And he fucking hated that house. He was miserable at the end in St. Helena. He's like, everything's horrible. And they were like, well, what the fuck are you going to do?
Well, Bony. You know, good for him. Because seriously, he got off pretty easily being exiled to his house in St. Helena. Like, come on. Look at this little cat, though.
Oh Frank's come up to make a little appearance.
Oh, he's so cute. Well,
he's a tiger, really, isn't he?
Yeah,
stripy. He's a good boy.
Don't walk on my laptop.
Don't ruin this.
You come over here to me and we'll be, we'll be good friends, but you can't walk on my laptop.
Oh, Emma's got a kitten now.
That's why I've got a kitten. The end.
There we are. That is the story of the affair of the diamond necklace. A little bit about Marie Antoinette. But what do you think, people? What do you think of the scandal that surrounded Marie Antoinette? Maybe you're a big lover of the French Revolution history or French history at all. Maybe just interested in Marie Antoinette's big hair or diamond necklaces and all the people who were plotting. I love that plot and I think it's so well executed from a really, really stupid cardinal. Such is life. Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode and share your thoughts, your theories, your feelings. Share more suggestions of stories. But most importantly, I think they should mix up a French diamond.
Yeah, I think so too.
If you liked it, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said that like that. Like, well, I mean, it's not poison.
Because you can pretty much give it to children if I like it, you know?
We should.
Yes.
It's a nice combination of all the good things. I think Nick would love it, so we'll have to serve him up one soon. The recipe will be out this weekend.
Oh my God, do you hear that?
What was that? That was just ice, wasn't it?
Do you hear the people sing? Singing the songs of angry men. It is the Fuck music off. Of a people who will not be slaves again. I've been waiting for ages to do that. So don't, Frank told me to do it.
Frank told you to do it. Join us in singing hits from Les Mis. Send us your favourite songs. If you haven't already, please consider joining us on Patreon and leave us a review on Apple iTunes if you can. And also, if you want to hear more from Emma.
Oh, yes.
Where would we hear from you?
If you search Real Life Ghost Stories anywhere that you get podcasts, my dulcet tones are there telling ghost stories. Mm. The end. Frank is purring on my knee.
He's loving it. The end of the tale with cat purrs. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.